Ads, schmads. If you don't want ads, that's okay. Choose the Dave McWilliams Plus option on Apple Podcasts. And hey presto, no ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How you doing there? We're having a little bit of a giggle down here in the basement. We're talking about heuristics and shortcuts. And Daniel Kahneman, who you will know, was a very brilliant behavioural economist who passed away the other week. We were actually going to talk about him. Maybe next week, John, we'll talk about him. We were talking about heuristics,
shortcuts. Yeah.
And the fact that John is learning French.
Do you remember we spoke a little while ago about me doing the Beeble? And walking around the park trying to learn. I have to say, I was over in France last week, as you know.
Yes, I do know.
Doing a bit of walking and stuff. And I was really disappointed with the level of my French. It was terrible. It was really terrible, but I've come up with a new plan.
Okay, give us the plan.
So Babel, I just wasn't putting the time into it.
So what is Babel?
Babel is one of these kind of...
Like the Tower of Babel thing, but it's an online course.
Yeah, it's an app. It's like right. Duolingo, Babel, and a few others.
Okay.
But I downloaded a book from Audible, and the book is Learn French in Your Sleep. And I thought, perfect.
That's really good.
So what I did
was... Greatest shortcut of all.
Absolutely, heuristics and all the rest. Yeah. So I stuck it on, and I've been listening away. Now, I generally have...
Hold on a second. So you go to bed with this in your ears.
Yeah, yeah.
And you sleep in French.
I sleep in French. But the problem is, I generally have...
Do you get to sleep with French people in this thing?
No, unfortunately, no, so that doesn't come in.
That doesn't go with it.
That's the premium. But I normally have kind of weird dreams anyway. But the problem now is that
That's a really weird dream about you and Prigozhin, wasn't it? In a Simca, in a Fiat Mirafiori.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah.
That's exactly it. But... You know, the problem is that now my weird dreams are in French, so I haven't a clue what's going on. So it's not working for me either way.
We will, over the course of the next few months. By the way, the podcast is going to talk about the relationship between China and America through the prism of Elon Musk, okay? Just so you know, listeners, we're not going to be talking about French. We are going to be talking about something else, right? But we will have this progression of John in French over the course of the next 6 months, okay?
Wait.
And we will we'll get a prize. And actual fact, you could end up like Ronan O'Gara.
Yes.
L'opportunité, c'est fucking an arm, right? So here we go. We're going to talk about Elon Musk, right? And the reason I want to talk about Elon Musk, one is because he's actually a very fascinating character, okay?
He is.
But two is the share price of Tesla, his kind of marquee brand of all his brands. I mean, he's got Twitter or X and he's got all Starlink and everything. But Tesla is the sort of brand
that Neuralink, which I think is a crazy one.
I know. And he's involved. He's involved in OpenAI. I mean, he's involved in everything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But fascinatingly, Tesla, if you were to think about the hype and the marketing and the branding around Tesla, you would think this is a car company and the share price of a car company that continues to rise and rise and rise.
Mm.
But actually, if you look at what's happened, his share price of Tesla is down 30% since January and 60% from its peak. And the question is why? Because there's a perception that, you know, Musk, the individual, everything he touches turned to gold, like Midas, King Midas.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But the question is, why is Tesla collapsing? And it's collapsing because its lunch has been eaten by Chinese competitors.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about industrial espionage and the rise and fall of great great manufacturing and industrial nations as IP is robbed from one to the other. But the interesting thing about Musk himself is that one of the reasons he's fascinating is he himself is a complete outlier of a personality. And his personality is very much driven by... Do you remember we talked about Ayn Rand, John? A while ago, the Fountainhead, the book, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Ayn Rand was, her real name is Alina Rosenbaum, and she was a Russian immigrant to the United States. She had come, I think her family were from a combination of Leningrad and Odessa. She actually went by the name of Alice O'Connor for Irish listeners because she married a fellow called O'Connor. Right, and she decided to go by the married name, which is very unusual given her whole worldview, which was a thing called objectivism, right? It was a philosophy.
Explain and that.
Her basic idea. So if you look at the book, The Fountainhead, the main hero in the book is a guy called Howard Rourke. And Howard Rourke was a very single-minded, brilliant architect. And the book opens with the immortal line, Howard Rourke laughed. And it's about this megalomaniac, egomaniac, but actually very fascinating person. And her basic thrust is the idea that the most important thing for people to do is a devotion to the individual and personal productivity and achievement. And if that's your devotion in life, you will create lots and lots of brilliant things around you, and that's sufficient, right?
Okay.
Now, in many ways, I mean, the book was something I read when I was, you know, very young, right? And it was very attractive. There's another one called Atlas
Shrugged.
But
in primary school?
I was probably in college. You know, I wasn't that advanced, John. I was building tree huts with you in primary school, right? Playing chasing and three and in and curbs. Do you remember curbs?
I do, yeah.
One of the greatest suburban games ever. If anybody else remembers curbs, it was a fantastic, it was an evolved state. Remember people say, oh, did you play marbles when you were young? No, we didn't play marbles, we played curbs.
Curbs, yeah.
Right, anyway. The point is, the book is captivating, but it's all about this notion that community and communitaire concerns should not ever drag down the genius of these unique people. Mm. These people are consequential and these people change the world. And her basic idea is that humanity is basically a bell curve. Most of us are in the middle, but there are outliers. What they call fat tails in statistics. There are outliers on either side, and these outliers, you know, can be very, very good or very, very bad, very brilliant or very stupid, depending. However, the brilliant ones change the world. And when you look at Musk, that's what he is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But all those...
They're like little blasts of radiation on DNA.
They're energy. You're absolutely right. And... You know, so a lot of people, even we heard like Nick Hanauer was saying, you know, how Musk last week is a flawed character and he's this, that and the other. Yeah. But he is somebody who has been enormously consequential to the world in terms of everything that he's set up. All the companies he's seeded, all the companies that he's backed, all the companies he's produced. And of course, somebody like that creates lots of enemies, but also lots of fans because he is fascinating, which makes the Tesla story all the more interesting because the Tesla story means that he obviously has feet of clay like everybody. And the Tesla story then shines a light onto something which I've always been fascinated by, not just because I'm Irish, is how do countries get rich? Yeah. Why do countries get rich? How long does that last? And what is the process whereby you get rich? And the process whereby you get poor. So, you know, in the case of Ireland, we've had 30 years of really, really strong economic growth that came after 300 years of really, really shite economic growth, right? Okay, so it was a complete outlier. So most people think of economics and politics and society as what they call path dependent. And path dependency means that history matters, which is the idea that what you did in the past has a massive, massive impact. And in general, societies, peoples, nations, races, whatever, tend to actually avoid change and we just do what we've always done, right?
Yeah.
And in economics terms, the most brilliant example of that in industrial phase. So companies, people, nations avoid change as embodied by people like Musk. and we just basically are path dependent.
Yeah.
And
that makes perfect sense. I mean, the human condition avoids change because change is uncomfortable.
Yes.
It brings on anxiety.
Disruption,
kind of stuff.
Move fast and embrace things. So we would take the more Edmund Burke approach, right? So I was contemplating this, John, as I was walking into Trinity because I was teaching in Trinity last week.
Yes.
And if you walk into Trinity, you will see a statue of Edmund Burke, the great Irish philosopher, who again, a bit like our friend Musk, divides opinion. Because Edmund Burke's basic idea was, he was the man who came up with the term conservatism, to conserve, right?
Okay.
And of course, Irish people don't really like this because the idea that an Irish man came up with conservatism.
Yeah. I don't think they know that.
Yeah, well, Edmund Burke, he's a fascinating person. So lived, just so you know, lived late 18th century, born in Longford, John, your neck of the woods.
Yes, yeah.
And became an MP in the UK. Was a barrister, was an Irish barrister, went to Trinity. But he came up with, his most famous book was called Reflections on the Revolution in France. And it was a retort to French radicalism. And his basic idea was, again, we forget that the French Revolution convulsed the world. Mm. And his idea, Burke's idea, it's called Burkean conservatism. And the notion is that tradition matters. Mm. That the way in which humans progress is path dependent. And okay. Tradition is nothing more than learning by doing, than humans saying, you know what? We keep these traditions because they're worthwhile. Mm. So traditions in the Burkean worldview are actually the reflection of choices made by previous generations. And that in order to change society, you've got to move very slowly.
Yeah.
So little bit upon little bit upon little bit.
Yeah, like evolutionary stuff.
Exactly. And I was looking, when I was contemplating this the other day, going into Trinity, John, to teach economics, right? I was kind of looking at the arc. So Burke is looking out at Dame Street.
Yeah.
And I was contemplating what he was looking at in the architecture, right? So you've got Georgian architecture.
Yeah.
And then you've Victorian architecture on top of that.
Yeah.
And then you've Edwardian architecture. And then you've what I call new Irish brutalism, like the central bank and these sort of things.
Yeah,
and then
you've
got like Twee architecture. And the interesting thing, the fabric of the visual fabric of a city is kind of Burkean in the sense that it's something built upon something else, upon something else.
Yeah, it's a record over time.
So that's path dependency, right? And people like Musk don't agree with that. They believe we should change very quickly.
Yeah.
And even in industry, another way to look at this path dependency, John, is the QWERTY keyboard. You know the keyboard we have? Like if you look at your phone, right? Look at your phone or look at the keyboard. You have this bizarre keyboard whose QWERTY are the top five letters on all keyboards in the English language.
Yeah.
And do you know how that came about?
No, I don't.
Because they make no logical sense, they make no alphabetical sense. So the QWERTY keyboard that we actually use comes from, believe it or not, an anti-engineering thing.
Go on. Doesn't make sense.
When typewriters started in the late 19th century, they had, do you remember typewriters when we were young?
I do.
You push down and a big sort of bar came
out. Yeah, we had a great old typewriter back in the day. So I remember it.
Think about those typewriters, right?
Yeah.
The QWERTY keyboard was designed by Remington, the company,
that
make razors. They used to make typewriters, right?
Yeah.
And it was designed to slow down the pace at which typists typed. Why? Because those big levers used to get jammed when the typists typed too quickly.
Right.
So they took all the nouns and they jumbled them all around the keyboard. And so rather than have a logical A, B, C, D across the top, as you'd imagine, we have QWERTY. So we've got letters that are usually never go together, like Q, W, E, R, T, and Y, right? Now, the fascinating thing about path dependency is that you would have thought that over the last 100 years, as we dispensed with those old keyboards that used to get stuck, we would dispense with the keyboard and we would actually gravitate towards a keyboard that was structured to reflect the English language and the words we use most. And the letters we use most. But no, we've stuck with the QWERTY keyboard, even though it's actually very difficult to type on.
But is it not something that you get used to?
You get used to it, but what I'm saying
is, the more you get used to it, then you speed up.
Yeah, but it's still designed as an anti-engineering device to slow down typists.
That's bizarre.
Right? Isn't it bizarre?
Yeah.
But because of path dependency, we have stuck with it. Yeah. As you said, we just kind of got used to it. Now, Musk would say, no, we can't do that. We've got to abandon it and do what's most logical.
Yeah.
And this is part of that whole acceleration movement, you know, that we've got old ways of doing things, we abandon them, right?
And Schumpeter and...
all that sort of stuff. But this is kind of the anti-Schumpeterian notion that it's all using a keyboard that is designed to confuse us.
Okay. But I don't know if people think about that anymore because it's become the norm.
I know. But if you stop to think about it, you could devise a keyboard that would be much more logical. But we don't, because it's the norm. And this, again, there is so much capital invested in this keyboard, but it's only in English.
Yeah.
All other keyboards in different languages are much more logical. But we don't see it because we don't speak. But you're going to speak French now. You're going to, it's going to be quite different, John. It's going to be quite different. You're going to be typing away. Exactly. But anyway, my point is, let's go back to Musk, right? What is happening to Elon Musk is the following. His IP, he decided about 10 years ago to produce more cars in China because he could get skilled workers, it was cheaper, all that sort of stuff. Not realizing, or maybe realizing, that the Chinese workers and managers would just steal his technology and move to a Chinese company, which they did, and the company's called BYD.
Yes.
And now BYD outsells Tesla.
And you see those cars all over the roads here.
All over the roads. So what you see is
they're not bad, actually.
I presume they're fine. I mean, cars are cars. I mean, this...
They get you from A to B.
Yeah. So Tesla, right, was worth, at the peak, $1.3 trillion. It is now halved, but it's still worth about $700 billion. Yeah. Now, that's the market cap. Even at that, the market cap of Tesla is much greater than much bigger car companies that are selling many, many more cars. Right? So if you compare Tesla's market cap to Toyota, right? Tesla is $700 billion. Toyota is $300 billion, even though Tesla sells far fewer cars.
Yeah.
Ford, $54
billion.
Yeah. Tiny in comparison to Tesla. GM, General Motors, $52 billion. So what is happening? This is the Musk factor. This goes back to Elon Musk.
Mm.
People are betting on Tesla because of him.
Yeah.
Because you should be buying Toyota. And if you actually look at the share price between Toyota and Tesla in the last year, Toyota's gone up about 30%. Tesla's gone down since January, about 30%. So there's a 60% difference in share price performance. And still Tesla is worth much more because people are backing this Howard Rohr fountainhead type creative genius that is Musk.
But it's interesting as well is that, I don't know what you think, but I think the Teslas look like the old Mondeos anyway. They actually do.
Yeah. And you know, the funniest thing is, you remember Mondeo Man became a character in the British election?
Exactly. So I wonder, is that going to happen to Tesla Man?
Tesla Man is going to vote right wing, right? He's going to vote right wing. He's going to vote anti-immigrant. Tesla Man, you heard it here first. He is going to be a character in the next election. Probably, no doubt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He'd be a kind of a tech bro, Bitcoin infused. Sort of. Actually, you see who Musk was meeting yesterday? Your mate.
Who's my mate?
Milei in Argentina.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, in Texas. They had a chin wag.
I bet he'll move a factory down there.
Of course he'll move a factory down there.
Yeah.
Of course he'll move a factory down there. You know, and it makes complete sense.
Mm.
You know, remember I said Milei is going to sell off Argentina to the highest bidder. And who's the highest bidder in the world? The richest man in the world. And who's the richest man?
Yeah.
The boy Elon. My point is that what is happening, John, is we are wrapped up in the Elon Musk part of the narrative. But if we actually take a little bit of altitude, what we're looking at is the way in which countries rob each other's technology and the way in which industrial power shifts and the way in which countries that were once rich, like the United States, get overtaken by the likes of China. And if you look at economic history, what you see is this is a characteristic of global economics that goes all the way back, that countries that were really rich lose their momentum and countries that are poor gain momentum. And that's what's happening.
So is this part of the kind of the general ebb and flow of macroeconomics and the way companies rise and fall and countries rise and fall?
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Let's get into this a little bit more because this is fascinating. After a break.
Great.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, Mike, we were talking there about the kind of ebb and flow of companies and countries and the economy and economics in general. But you know, I was saying at the start there that I was in France. And, you know, the part of France that we go to is that little corner down near Carcassonne, south of Carcassonne, west of
Is that
Perpignan.
Kind of Montpellier region, is it?
No, it's further, it's further west than it. It's
further west. Oh, towards the Pyrenees.
It's in the foothills of the Pyrenees. Axas, it's gorgeous. Anyway, I just love walking around there and it's fab. Great wine country. Corbier, wine, blah, blah,
Fantastic.
Blah. But here is the interesting point, talking about ebb and flow. One of the local towns down there, a place called Quillan.
Quillan.
Big rugby town. But Quillan from the 1950s, it's a big agricultural area, but from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, was really wealthy town. And its wealth was based on the fact that it was the centre in Europe for the production of Formica.
Formica tables.
Remember we had Formica everything.
Formica everything.
Yeah.
We had Formica dinners.
That's kind of crunchy, right?
Yeah, crunchy. Yeah, yeah. Overcooked liver. And
but so that was the centre in Europe for Formica. And as you say, everyone had Formica. So it was booming. And it was booming so much that the local rugby team, Quillan, were able to attract some of the best French rugby players because they could pay them.
So Formica actually, the factory paid them?
Paid them, yeah.
Right.
So we were talking about IP. China began production of Formica. So most of the production shifted over to China.
So the Chinese destroyed the town.
And then when 2008 hit, it completely devastated the town and the area. So the town, it's a lovely town on the River Aude, really lovely, but it's kind of faded glory type of thing.
This is what we're talking about.
But it will
about.
Come back, but it's just
amazing.
But
as a different thing.
Absolutely as a different
as
thing.
As a different thing. No, yeah. It'll come back as a different thing. And this is the ebb and flow of industry.
Yeah.
So if we stand back, say globalization is a reasonably old idea. People think it's very, very new, but it's a reasonably old idea. Mm. And trade, when you open up for trade, it usually ends up that in the aggregate, everyone does well. And the reason I say this is that you take Formica tables.
Yeah.
In the aggregate, what has happened is Formica tables have fallen in price to Western consumers, right? Mm. So lots of people have done well. But specific regions always do very badly. So trade, yes, in the aggregate, economists say everyone does well, but certain areas that used to produce do very badly. And unless the state compensates those areas that do very badly, there will be a residual resentment towards globalization. Naturally,
yes.
Right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
yeah.
see this, for example, what happened in Quillan.
Yeah, Quillan.
Happened in Detroit. So
yes.
Detroit made all the cars, the Motor City.
Yeah.
Like if we look at our, if you look at, you know, Motown, right? Motown comes from Detroit, from the Motor City.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
it was totally destroyed by Japanese and later Chinese competition. So in the aggregate, did Americans get cheaper, higher quality Toyotas for their dollar? Yes, they did.
Yeah.
but specific places got destroyed. And
they also got a rust belt.
And they got a rust belt. Yeah. And it's the same sort of idea. Mm. And south of France, industrial parts of England, we haven't had this because we didn't have any industry.
Yeah, yeah.
But we have industry now that will disappear. And we have multinationals that might go. And there will be areas where you think, wow, do you remember back? This could be a halcyon period for Ireland that people could look back and say, do you remember 2024?
The good old days.
The good old days. No, really.
Yeah, you know.
And things go. But it's ever thus, John. I'm reading a book that I really love and I'm rereading. It's called The Wealth and Poverty of Nations by David Landes, who was an economic historian who wrote this in the late 1990s. And it's basically a big canvas book about how the world grew.
Yeah.
But he cites all sorts of fascinating ideas of where industries moved, either because they were too cheap or because they didn't have the know-how or because the knowledge moved, a little bit like your Tesla story and your Formica story. But he tells a great story, John, about quinine. Do you know quinine? Quinine is your gin and tonics.
Yes, yeah, I was thinking that, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to have a drink now. It's about half two in the afternoon. It's time for a gin, right? So when we were having your gin and tonic, in your tonic is this thing called quinine.
Yeah.
And quinine was incredibly popular in the Raj in India because quinine helped the symptoms of malaria.
Yes, yeah.
Right? The Brits wanted to create as much quinine as they could. But quinine came from the bark of a particular tree that grew only in Peru.
Hey, I didn't know this at all. This is the stuff.
Reading the books, right? Yeah. So quinine came from a tree called the quinchoa tree in Peru. Now, do you know Kew Gardens in England?
I do. I know it very well.
Because you like all that stuff, right? You like naturalism, right? But botany...
Naturism,
right? But botany was the leading, I think, botany was one of the leading factors in colonialism. I know this sounds bizarre to you because we always think Kew Gardens, lovely nature, plants, etc. But what Kew Gardens was originally was a laboratory for the British Empire.
Yeah.
So the Brits got all these weird plants that had these hugely medicinal characteristics from the Andes, from the Amazon. They brought them to Kew simply to try and regrow them.
Yeah.
Try to reseed them and say, could they actually put them somewhere else?
Yeah.
And they wanted to put them in India, where the Brits had the Raj, because all the Brits were dying of malaria, right? And of course, they couldn't do it.
But it wouldn't grow, would it?
It wouldn't grow in India.
Oh.
So they had to import the quinine from the Dutch in Indonesia, right? Because the climate in Indonesia, in the rainforest there, and the climate in the Amazon were similar. Whereas the climates in India, they couldn't figure out how to grow properly in India.
Okay.
But this is where industrial espionage comes in and industrial policy, right? So the Brits then decided, okay, what we're going to do is organic chemistry was just starting.
Mm.
And they said, okay, so this is amazing. We can break down to molecules and compounds and we can, in a lab, we can actually put these things together. We can synthesize new ideas so we can create new quinine. So this guy, a British chemist called William Henry Perkin,
right, okay.
Went off, instructed by Westminster, to find synthetic quinine because they wanted to break the monopoly of the Dutch.
Right.
He went off to try and actually synthesize quinine in the chemical laboratory using very early organic chemistry, right?
Right.
And not only did he not find quinine, but he found something even more valuable.
Go on.
He synthesized all these molecules, John, he came up with...
ecstasy. Sorry, continue.
He came up with ecstasy, so he was buzzing. He's dropped about five yolks. So John is now in the back of a darkened club. He's buzzing. He's the Sean Ryder of podcasts. No, stop your ecstasy, right?
Sorry.
We move on, right? He made colour, mauve.
Oh,
so they
yes.
synthesised colour for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And of course, synthesising colour changed the fashion industry.
Yeah.
Because you could then make reds and yellows and purples from chemical compounds. And this, of course, was going to be a boom for the Brits because the Brits said, now we can synthesize color. We have all the actual ingredients that go into it, which was basically an oil that came from coal called coal tar. They had everything.
Yeah, yeah.
They also had a burgeoning market. And everybody thought Britain would end up being the dyeing and pharmaceutical capital of the world. But that didn't happen.
Why?
Because all the industry went to Germany. So this is the interesting thing is, why did it go to Germany?
All the chemical industry.
All the chemical industry.
Right.
So if you remember we did that podcast in Germany?
Yeah.
With Andrea Binder. She was talking about the German industrial aristocracy.
Yes. Yeah.
And the massive company that was BASF.
Yeah.
BASF, massive chemical company, because the Germans, number one, sent German scientists to England to rob the IP under the auspices that they were managers and they were actually going to England. This is back to Elon Musk.
It was a very
Musk.
Deliberate.
Right, okay. So they knew the Brits had all the industrial capacity, but the Germans had better chemical engineers. Mm. And they sent their chemical engineers to England to work. So the Brits were like, oh, isn't this fantastic? These Germans are coming up. They cost half nothing.
Yeah.
Immigrants, we'll give them jobs. They'll work this new industry called the pharmaceutical industry. Because basically this was the beginning of the pharmaceutical industry. And the Germans robbed all the IP, robbed all the know-how, and went back to Germany and set up, you know, BASF, Hoechst, all those huge pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
And it was the biggest shift in industrial competitiveness the world has ever seen, because Britain lost the pharmaceutical industry, the dyeing industry, and Germany created it. And it was exactly the same as happened to Musk. The Brits thought they were miles ahead of the equation. They used the Germans, like Musk thought they used the Chinese.
Yeah.
Like the Americans thought they used the Chinese. And lo and behold, they robbed the IP. And now, what is the biggest pharmaceutical country in the world? Germany. Still.
Yes.
Still, 100 years later. That's how economics works.
So let's bring it back to now then.
Yeah.
So where's industry? Where's the next big ebb and flow? Who's the next winner? Who's the next loser?
Well, at the moment, China is the major winner, right?
Yeah.
But that will pass too.
Yeah.
And if you look at Vietnam's coming up, Indonesia's coming up. By the way, it's all Asia.
Yeah, okay,
White Europeans, we're over, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to be basically learning French and talking about the beauties of Formica and ecstasy, right? That's where we are, right? Okay. We're in that lab, John. But it's going to be Asia. It's going to be Asia, so it's going to be Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, Laos, all these places where the labor is cheap, where the people are hungry and they want knowledge and they're going to work for it. And they will do to China what China has done to America. But, and here's the word of caution.
Yeah.
The industrial battle between Britain and Germany that raged in the late 19th century manifested itself in the Somme. That's the problem. So it was when Germany and Britain finally clashed. They clashed over industry, they clashed over IP, they clashed over territory in Africa. But eventually they set upon each other in 1914.
Are you saying that that's the inevitable outcome?
It's not the inevitable outcome, but it's one of the outcomes.
Okay.
Right? It's one of the outcomes. And that is why this industrial Cold War and a real Cold War are basically two sides of the same coin. And that's why we should watch it. People are looking at Elon Musk now, but that's not the takeaway. The takeaway is the process whereby America and China begin to consistently go head to head. And as America loses in the industrial war, certain parts of America will think, can we win anywhere else? And the last thing they want, but the way in which it might be going inevitably, is some sort of military conflict.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.